This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to
a
two-year low.
There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, good, Adam. How you doing?
Good, thank you. As always, massive show coming up. Before we get stuck in though, if you could leave us a rating or a review even, give it 5 stars and leave some kind words, we would very much appreciate it. But massive show coming up. Thomas, America now has an Inflation Reduction Act. Catch that and many more great acts performing at FinFest, October 15th. Walmart subscription service, Walmart Plus, wants to launch a streaming service, the place for all your homewares dramas, I guess. Not sure what's going on there. And the Don't Pay UK campaign is gaining momentum. Is it just a storm in an English breakfast teacup? We'll get to that a bit later. But first, Thomas, Qantas head office staff have been told to pack their bags. No, wait, sorry. They've been told to pack your bags. Thomas, what's happening?
Oh, nice. Yeah, there's a memo gone out to head office staff asking them to volunteer to take part in frontline airport assisting roles, so baggage handling being one of them.
Right.
Apparently they're quite short-staffed in the,
I wonder if this counts as like your, like your organisations have volunteering days where you can volunteer in the community. Why do you volunteer by packing Qantas bags for a day?
Volunteer for the company.
They wouldn't have to pay them either, so. It's a win-win.
Yeah, markets responded positively to the labour cost-cutting measures. they're still short staffed and they're having a terrible time at the moment. I don't know if you saw someone egged Alan Joyce's house last week, or the week before or something. People are so angry about it, which is like, it's pretty, that's premeditated anger. You got to buy some eggs, find out where he lives.
And eggs aren't cheap.
No.
Right. So talk about commitment.
Yeah, they're having a bit of a woeful time. 8.1% of domestic services were cancelled in June.
Wow, 8.1.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah, that's almost 1 in 10. That's a lot. Yeah, like we were looking at booking some flights, and we actually had to ask the question about whether we're going to go with Qantas because we just weren't sure. One in ten chance that your flight's going to get cancelled.
This is excellent news. Great. I'm flying next week. I'm flying next Wednesday.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Right.
It's okay, though. I'm not flying Qantas. I'm flying Jetstar. So I imagine that we'll get priority.
Yeah.
If you are handling my bags next week, do us a solid, would you? Slip them through.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan. Yeah. And the rest of the executive team.
Yeah. So the 8.1% are cancelled. 46% of flights are delayed. All airlines are struggling because you had this whiplash effect where everything shut down and then it reopened more strongly than expected. They're under-resourced because they shed a lot of resources during the pandemic. So they're all struggling. But that 46% of delayed flights is more than double the figure in the US.
This is we laid off too many staff story, or is this a COVID still around kind of keeping our workforce from working story, or is it a bit of both?
It's a bit of both. The airline was pointing to the COVID sickness, and COVID has been doing the rounds. So That I think that is in the mix. Yeah, they did, but they did sack a lot of staff. Like I saw one number, and there's a few different reports, but I saw as much as 8,000 people were sacked. Right. Some baggage handling was the baggage handlers were sacked, and then a contractors were brought in to handle the baggage handling, and that got challenged in the courts, and the federal court said that that was unlawful. Qantas is in the process of challenging appealing that decision.
Mm.
But yeah, they did go on a massive downsizing, and yeah, now seem like they're just under resourced across the whole organization.
Right. Didn't they? They got a bunch of money during COVID, didn't they? Didn't the government
they got quite
sort of
a lot
give
of
them a
money.
Bit of stimuli?
Yeah. Just plop some stimuli right in there. $2 billion of bailout money.
Right.
It's quite a lot.
And they said, thank you for the $2 billion. We're going to lay some people off.
It's kind of the nature of, I mean, it was an emergency, but like it's one of the criticisms of JobKeeper and all the stimulus packages is that there was no accountability and no like commitments. Like, so for that $2 billion, there wasn't a commitment to maintain service levels. There wasn't a commitment to maintain staff levels.
Mm.
There wasn't a commitment to anything. It was just $2 billion.
Yeah, right.
And that's not chicken feed. Like, the entire Qantas company is worth $3 billion. So it's like,
right.
That's a lot of money. I mean, effectively, the government could have bought 2/3 of Qantas and sort of taken it over if they wanted to for that money. But it kind of seems they just sort of, Qantas took the money and ran with it and then used the crisis as an excuse to, I mean, they've had problems with their unionized staff for quite a while. Like it was, I think back in 2010 when Alan Joyce became a celebrity, it was because he grounded the entire Qantas fleet to deal with the union problem.
Right.
And so there's been some troubles there for a while, and it does look like they've used this opportunity with everyone sort of stuck at home or furloughed to sort of clean house and sort of shed a lot of the workforce and rejig their arrangements, move to more contractors and those sort of things, which is like when – and to be fair to Qantas, when Virgin came in, they came in without the legacy union arrangements that Qantas had and worked with a much more agile kind of structure and had more contractors and that sort of thing. I think Qantas are seeing this – saw COVID as a chance to sort of reset their sort of industrial relations regime.
Right.
But it sort of was just sort of bad timing, and now they're getting hammered, but with a lack of staff.
Mm.
That said, they did take that $2 billion and do a lot of things with it. So they replaced their fleet of planes.
Mm.
And they bought Alliance Aviation, which does charter flights for fly in, fly out.
Right.
Yeah, and then gave their executives some bonuses. So I think that people were saying like, well, is that the best use of that money?
Mm.
And like, well, you had that money. You can't now complain like, oh, the service has gone to custard.
Mm.
You know, well, that was what the $2 billion was supposed to stop that from happening. So,
and arguably now, if they're like paying their C-suite to pack bags, they're paying way too much for baggage handling. All right, Thomas, so America now has the Inflation Reduction Act. Could it really be as exciting as it sounds?
No, it's not as exciting as it sounds. But it did get up last week, got through the Senate, and it was hotly contested. So it's seen as a win. It's seen as a win for Joe Biden and the Democrats that they got this thing over the line.
Hmm.
It's being sold as the Inflation Reduction Act, and I mean, it's a hot topic. It's the number one topic in America right now. So
yeah, so their inflation's at like 9% or something, isn't it?
Yeah, 8.5%.
Right.
It's down from 9.1% in June, which was a record high. It's eased a little. We got inflation of July at 0%, which kind of gave people like, oh, maybe it's not so bad.
Right.
Annual inflation dropped to 8.5%, but 8.5% is still very high.
This is a perfect time then to introduce a policy like this.
The Inflation Reduction
Act. Like to bring it in once you've seen it start to go down. Then let's bring it in now and then just ride this baby home as we take credit as the Inflation Reduction Act that we put together now takes credit for any decrease in inflation from here on out after we've seen I don't know. Have we seen the peak?
Well, possibly. But yeah, don't know for sure. I mean, oil prices came off and that's what drove the weaker number in July.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know.
Because stonks are doing well. The share market's buoyant. It's up
20%. It's bull market.
Yeah. Buy, buy, buy. No, don't buy. Not a buy, hold or sell recommendation. So will the Inflation Reduction Act actually do what it says on the can? Is it going to actually reduce inflation or is it going to happen anyway?
My read of what's in the package is that if inflation goes down from here, it won't really be thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act. And I think if we're honest, the Inflation Reduction Act isn't really trying to reduce inflation. That's not what it's about.
I mean, love politics.
Yeah, I mean, they do this in America. They give these acts grand names, but they're all spin. It's like Trump had the Clean Air Act, which was all about gutting the Environmental Protection Agency and increasing pollution. But he called it the Clean Air Act or something like that.
Yeah, right. So
they do that in America. You know, 70% of Americans think inflation's a very big problem. 44% think it's the number one issue in America right now. So it has that sellability. They're spending $370 billion in the package. So there's a lot of spending going into it. They're doing things. There's energy security and climate change. There's more healthcare. There's funding for drought relief, a few other things like that. So there's a big spending package. But at the same time, they're raising $740 billion in new taxes. They're introducing a 15% minimum tax rate on large corporations.
So is that how they're reducing inflation? By taxing everyone more, which then leaves less money going around?
That's the idea. Right. That's how you get away with calling it an Inflation Reduction Act, is that it's taking more money out of the economy than it's putting in.
Okay.
Which on like that level is true. But if you look at the timing, like the Penn Wharton budget model, Penn Wharton's like a, I think, an independent, nonpartisan think tank.
Yeah, I don't think you need to tell us who Penn Wharton is. All over the model, all over it.
Yeah, well, as you would know, the the timing's all out. So the bill, the way it's structured at the moment, actually increases the deficit over the next 4 years, and 90% of the deficit reduction happens from 2029 through to 2031. So it's like seven years from now.
Mm.
Yeah, inflation's a problem right now. Like it's a problem today and it's a problem this month. If you want to deal with it, you need to deal with it right now. Cutting back on government spending or what the government's contributing to the economy back out in 2029 isn't really going to help you right now.
Is there anything we can learn from this? I mean, is it too early to say? Do we need our own Inflation Reduction Act?
But potentially we will. I mean, I think we're sort of heading, Inflation Australia's heading that way. I mean, what's interesting, I think, is it's easy to give people money through the government, through federal spending. It's much harder to take it away.
Right.
And this is what this is trying to do. But, you know, anyone who gets their money taken away from them is unhappy, and you create enemies and that creates political problems. So I think we're going to face the same thing in Australia, that, you know, a lot of the spending that sort of flowed into the economy through COVID, it's going to be hard to unwind that without making people upset. You know, think about like a tourism support package. Like, it's easy to make the case like, well, tourism hasn't recovered yet. Like, don't be taking away our money. But every sector is going to be making an argument like that.
Mm.
So it's hard for federal governments to wind back the spending once it's in place. But the thing, though, if that's happening, if it's hard to do that while inflation is still on a tearaway, that puts all of the heavy lifting on monetary policy and puts it all onto interest rates.
Right.
And so a policy essentially like this, which if it's the way I'm characterizing it, which may be a gross generalization, but if it's actually contributing to spending, if it's actually juicing the economy in the short term and inflation's still on a runaway, that means higher interest rates. So I guess it's pushing it all onto monetary policy to do the heavy lifting, and interest rates have to go higher. that might be Australia's fate as well. Like if America can't wrangle this, I think Australia's sort of political system's a bit easier to work with than the American one.
Yeah, and you mentioned it's difficult to take money off of people, but in America they've got guns. It's always easy to take money off people when you're holding a gun. All right, why don't we pause there? We'll grab a quick word from this week's sponsors and be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back. Here on Comedian versus Economist. You can send us an email if you like, cve@equitymates.com or via the website equitymates.com/CVE. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at CVE Podcast. Thomas, Walmart Plus got some new features coming out. What is Walmart Plus and what do I get?
Yeah, so Walmart Plus is a subscription service to Walmart. Mm. You could think about it like if you were a subscriber to Kmart, what that might I don't know why Kmart doesn't offer it.
No.
It's a membership. Like everything's trying to go to the subscription business model. $12.95 a month gives you not a whole lot, like free shipping, discounts on fuel. I guess if you like buying a lot of stuff from them, maybe it's, you know, I guess if you're doing like a weekly grocery delivery, maybe it's
value. It's an American company, so we're probably not, most of our listeners probably aren't really across what Walmart does and doesn't sell, so it's hard to see the benefit. I don't even think in Australia we can order from Walmart. So it sounds a lot like what you get with an Amazon subscription.
I think that's what they're doing. Like Amazon, as always, is setting the bar. And this is Walmart's attempt to sort of catch up to it. What's interesting, what we learned this week, it's out in the Wall Street Journal, was covering this, that saying that Walmart executives are having chats with Paramount, Disney and Comcast about partnering up to offer a streaming service as part of Walmart Plus.
This is out of control, the streaming service thing.
Mm.
Like I feel like now companies are just making a streaming service and then working out what they'll put on it later.
Yeah.
Like even, I was browsing some shows on, I forget which one, I'm not even sure, and there was this Korean baseball series that was like a reality TV show about these Korean baseball teams. And it looked kind of interesting, but I turned it on, it was just garbage. And it just got me thinking, like this is... Who wanted this? You know, in Netflix Australia, like what's the market for a reality TV show based around two Korean baseball teams?
Yeah, niche.
Yeah, I'm sure it's interesting to someone, but I just feel like there's more and more as I try and find shows on different platforms now that it's just we've got the platform, so now we'll just find stuff to put on there and hope that someone watches it.
Yeah.
And have a few big ticket ones, you know, big ticket items and hope that has a halo effect or whatever it is.
I mean, it's starting to feel like TV did 5-10 years ago, right? Like there's lots on, most of it's junk. You catch a few good things on each one.
Yeah, but now we get to pay for it.
Pay for it, yeah, that's right. Another win for capitalism, delivering for consumers. Yeah,
I remember whinging about Foxtel being like $35 a month and thinking, oh, man, I can't afford that. Now my streaming bill's like $80 across 9 services.
Yeah, that's right. But it is very crowded. You think there has to be some sort of rationalization happening there.
I mean, if it was on brand, if there was like Walmart were just, and they were just streaming shows, it was like, this is how we make cereal boxes at the box factory. there's a Twitter account I follow that's just like how stuff gets made, and they just post videos of how stuff gets made, and it's fascinating. If that's their streaming offering, and if it was on point, I could see how it's like, you know, a thing.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't know. For it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's two things they're trying to do. Like, one is just tapping more consumers. So a few others have sort of partnered up with streaming services, like Verizon and T-Mobile in America have deals that give their customers discounted subscriptions to Disney Plus and Paramount Plus.
Hmm.
So it's sort of the idea that, like, there's already a lot of consumers there. It's about helping pull those particular consumers who are like in the Disney Plus area into Walmart and sort of like just accessing that consumer base. So that's sort of one potential driver. But the other is, I think there's this push towards a super app. So the super app where it's just like one app for everything that you buy. And this is sort of more advanced in China and Asia. So you've got Tencent in China, Grab in Singapore, Paytm in India. You know, you get a whole range of services from food delivery to streaming to chat to all these different things bundled together in one super app. And then if you own that super app, you own commerce. And that's always been Amazon's agenda. Amazon's always been there to, like, we just want to own the pipes of commerce.
Right. Yeah,
have full control of it. And so this is Walmart's, I think, play to, like, well, okay, let's try beef out the Walmart offering, that it's not just what's in the physical stores, but then you have the Walmart super app, and they're trying to, I think that's where they're going with it.
It seems an interesting, like, thing to tackle first. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I mean, I know they've got some basic stuff, but I don't know, like, the streaming market is so crowded at the moment that it seems an odd one to go after. Like, wouldn't you, like, I don't know, was there no other value proposition they could come up with for the Walmart Plus? They went, no, we're going to have to launch a streaming service if we want to be competitive.
Mm.
Like, they could have, I don't know, even like Walmart ride sharing or something. If,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think the interesting thing with Walmart is you need anything in the Walmart Plus has to be something that is almost universal. That's why I think like shopping and fuel go so well together. Like, is shopper dockets for fuel discounts in Australia. It makes sense because everyone who buys grocery.
It was in 1992.
Yeah, but you still have, like, Woolworths owns a whole bunch of fuel. And so, but it makes sense because your customers who buy groceries are the same customers who buy fuel. But if you're like, for ride sharing, for example, not everyone who shops at Walmart would ride share necessarily. It's pretty good, but it's like, so, like, it decreases the appeal of the subscription membership if you have things in there that people don't actually want.
Mm.
You know, like, if you had food delivery or something.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Like if you're like, well, no, I don't need that. I'm not going to subscribe because that's not an offering that I want. So you need things in the bundle that have universal appeal, and streaming is one of them. Like, it's, you know, most people have some kind of streaming thing going on.
They could maybe target like scented candles, because everyone loves like scented candles. Finally today, Don't Pay UK. Thomas, what is Don't Pay UK all about?
Yeah, so this is a campaign being organised. It's trying to get 1 million people to commit to not paying their electricity bills in winter in the UK this year. Not to say not pay at all, but to cancel their direct debit arrangements with their electricity provider.
Mm.
Yeah, and just sort of hit them that way, saying that, yeah, that energy prices are through the roof in the UK, as they are sort of everywhere, and it's not okay for them. They're saying, like, it's going to result in deaths.
But hang on, so the whole argument here is that they're going to not pay their energy bill to their energy provider. They're protesting against the government, so they're sort of protesting through their provider. Is that? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, so I think the government, like it is here, it's a regulated market, and the government controls what costs can get passed on through price increases.
Right.
It's not a market price in that sense. It's set by the government, but the government does have to respond to the wholesale electricity price pressures.
They're angry at the government, or they're angry at the retailers or at the providers? Or both?
Probably a bit of both. I mean, I think they're particularly angry that a lot of UK energy companies have made a mozza during this process, and energy generators in particular, and your Shell and your BP, they've made a lot of money, but they haven't passed that on. And there's been sort of some piecemeal attempts to sort of try and smooth it over for consumers, but they're saying it's skewed. It's companies are making a lot of money, but because consumers that are bearing the brunt of it.
So they want 1 million signatures. And what have they got at the moment?
I think it's over 100,000.
100,000? Yeah.
So then they need to 10x that in the next 2 months, which...
I don't think it's going to work.
No?
No. Well, I have complete confidence in general apathy of the masses. And the problem is it's mostly being run online, this petition, and it's just too easy to sign up. Like I just imagine people just like, well, I've changed my profile picture to like support this thing. I don't like what more can I do? I can sign up to a form. So I just think people will pledge to do this thing, but I don't know how many are actually going to follow through when it comes down to it, because there's a real cost, right? There's a, if you don't pay your energy bill, they cut off your power.
Yeah. Like,
that's a bold thing to try and do and hope that the other 1 million people that signed up are going to do the same thing.
It's not that simple that they just cut off your power. It is, they have a thing with there's prepaid or like a kind of pay-as-you-go system in the UK, and they're not suggesting people on those arrangements do. What they're suggesting is people on direct debits. If you don't pay on time, there's then 28 days where the company has to negotiate with you to try and figure out how to do it. If that doesn't work, they then got to take you to court and put you on some kind of payment plan to get the money from you. They can't just cut off your energy. They're not allowed to do that. And so that's sort of the play, is saying like, we want to hit them in two ways. One is like, if they lose that cash flow, if everyone cuts their direct debits, suddenly all that cash, that regular cash flow that they rely on, and they're probably pretty nimble, lean organization, so they're probably quite dependent on, there's probably not a lot of room in their cash flow to sort of deal with like, you know, 50%, say, of customers cutting their direct debits. So that puts stress on them. Then they've got to then follow up with 1 million customers and chase them through the courts to get the money back from them. And like I was reading one guy saying, who's saying like, yeah, I'm gonna cancel it. But, you know, I'll pay like on the last day or when I get the court letter. I'm not gonna let them cut them off, and it's not gonna show up on my credit rating, but I'm gonna kick up a stink and make it difficult for them.
Okay. Well, I could see how that could work.
So if they get enough people to do that, to just drag their heels and create a fuss, it could, you know, on a big enough scale, that would create a lot of problems.
I mean, they've got about 100,000 at the moment. I'm dubious on the numbers, mainly because I signed up. So I got a temporary email address and I signed up because I wanted to see how far I could get without being an active UK energy customer. And I got all the way through, and the number ticked over from 106,000, whatever it was, to one more. And so I don't know. Like, I imagine there'd be a lot of people just sussing it out, putting in, there'd be a lot of bots. There was no Google Capture or anything to stop me just... So there'd be a lot of spam bots just sending "don't pay UK" like, you know, phishing emails. The funniest thing though was the welcome email that I got after I signed up. So this welcome email came in, and literally the call to action in the welcome email was asking me if I could spare a few pounds to help with the campaign. This campaign that's trying to fight the cost of living and trying to fight rising prices and the fact that nobody can afford to pay their energy bill. And the first thing they ask you to do is spare a few pounds, help the cause. Sorry, man, all my money's tied up, actually. That's why I signed up.
But it's small change compared to, like, your electricity bill, surely, in the UK, like,
yeah,
we're talking about going average household bills going over to £4,500 a year in the UK. So, yeah, electricity's, yeah, it's going to hurt. Yeah, there was something that Citizens and Vices, an advocacy group, saying that self-disconnections are up eightfold. So that's people like, I can't afford electricity anymore. I'm just going to disconnect and just suffer through winter or whatever. I think 3,600 people between January and May this year already, and that's in summer. Well, January's, I guess, winter, but it's a real story. Like it's people's health and life and safety is at risk because they just can't afford the electricity. Mm. And so that's what they're sort of going for.
All right, I'll unsubscribe.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's also like if they get like, even if they don't get a million, but they get 500,000, it's enough to sort of say this is a big enough issue that enough people really care about it, enough people are going to take some action over it. I think it's a clever campaign. Like it's cancelling your direct debit is a pretty easy action item. It's not, you don't even have to get on the train and attend a protest. You just cancel your direct debit. It's about as easy as activism gets. If you get enough people together, it really puts the issue on the political map and then can shift things. There's an interesting precedent to this, which I don't think you know about, but there was a sewerage water. It was in Southern Water in Kent, the water provider in Kent. In 2020, they were fined £90 million for dumping raw sewerage into the sea.
Right.
Yeah, and they then tried to pass that cost onto consumers. And the consumers are like, we're not paying for you to clean up your mess.
Yeah.
And the consumers went on strike. They refused to pay. And in the end, they got 50% off their bills.
So hang on. The consumers got not 50% back of what they paid to cover the sewage dumping, just a 50% discount off their bills.
I don't know. Isn't that the same thing?
Well, it depends on the timing. If your normal bill is like $50 and then I was like, oh, yeah, but we – as a business, we had to dump a bunch of sewerage and then we got fined $90 million. So now your bill's going to be $100 instead of $50. And then you protested. So I went, all right, you can have 50% of it back and we'll just charge you $75 instead of $100. You're still down $25.
Yeah, this is way more detail than I'm aware. I don't know how much prices went up or how much they went down. Is this 50%? All right, it's a big number. Jeez. 50%. It's half.
Do your own research. Just the living embodiment.
don't get caught in the weeds.
Yeah, we might leave it there. Thank you very much for tuning in once again. Please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget FinFest happening October 15th. Head to equitymates.com/FinFest for all the info. That's it for us. You can send us an email if you like, cve@equitymates.com, or get us on Facebook and Instagram @CVEPodcasts. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.